KRCL champions building a more socially engaged Utah through locally driven programming that promotes music discovery and civic participation. Tune in to KRCL on 90.9 FM for a curated mix of music, including at least one track by a Utah artist every hour. From alternative rock to reggae, blues to bluegrass, KRCL is here to bring you the greatest bangers all day, every day.
Are you listening? This is Slug Soundwaves. My name is Joselie Paulette, and I use she, her pronouns. This is my second time on the podcast. The first time was about 4 years ago, right after I released my first studio record in July of 2017. Honest, but whose truth are you singing? I released No Woman is the Sea in March of 2020, March 13th of 2020 to be exact, so right as the entire world was shutting down from coronavirus. So since the last time that I was on the podcast, I feel like that was kind of the beginning of a lot of really big changes in my life. I see 2017 as kind of the year that my life changed and my understanding of the world changed and my personality changed just based on a lot of big things happening. And I think prior to 2017, I really thought I kind of had life figured out a little bit. I had that young person's confidence that really just said, you know, I know what I'm doing. I've got my priorities straight. I've got my life figured out. I'm happy. I've got this under control. And 2017, pretty much right after I finished recording Strangers, I lost my stepfather to suicide, and he was a really important person in my life, and it was the first time I'd ever experienced loss that close to me and to my family. It shook everything that I believed in. It changed every priority that I had. It made every little problem and every little thing that I used to write about feel so insignificant because I was suddenly dealing with this great big loss. And through that loss, I kind of found myself retreating into not a really creative year. So after I recorded Strangers, I kind of stopped writing music for a little while, and I stopped recording, and I played a few shows and played all of my old songs a lot, but really didn't know how to process those big feelings because I'd been writing songs as this like young person that just like kind of cheesily wrote about heartbreak. And then all of a sudden I was being faced with these really big grief feelings and loss feelings that didn't make sense in the way that I'd always processed things. So I kind of stopped processing things. I just didn't know how. I called 2017 to 2018 this interesting like lost year where I don't think I cried and I don't think I processed things very well. And I kind of became really emotionally closed off to the people in my life and to the feelings of grief that I really needed to work through. And all my life I have been about kindness. I've been thinking about it, everybody else. But there's part of me that thinks it's time to be selfish. There's part of me that wants you all to go to hell. In 2018, I ended a relationship that had been about 5 years long, and I went through a divorce, and the feelings from the loss of my stepfather and from the heaviness of the last several years really just all came to this ridiculous head that was every sad feeling all at once, and it was wrapped up in this very real and normal and relatable thing that is divorce. And I just remember thinking to myself, like, how this really normal thing that so many people go through all the time is like really, really hurting me. This like really painful process, and I was processing death at the same time, and it was just too much. So I started writing what would eventually become No Woman is the Sea right when all of those feelings started to become really tangible to me. And the ability to feel was just so exciting after not having felt for so long. And even though it was really heavy, the only way I could really deal with those big, giant, scary feelings that I'd never really dealt with before was to write.
Twin, so they said it'll happen to you too.
The fall and winter and kind of holiday season of 2018, I'd just been through my divorce and I kind of stumbled upon this Gibson Firebird. It was actually on Thanksgiving and I had gone to my dad's house for dinner and he was borrowing this guitar from a friend. He told me he was kind of planning on buying it maybe, but he was holding on to it for a little while and he'd had it for a couple months and he wasn't sure if he was going to buy it or not. I picked it up and I held it for a minute and I just felt so connected to this guitar. And I'm like, I'm not like a spiritual person. I'm not like super hippie woo woo about anything. But when I held this guitar, it just felt very comforting and very natural. And I felt this weird connection to it. And I don't know, I'm like a really tall, awkward, goofy person. And this, whenever I've played an electric guitar in the past, it always feels really tiny and silly. Like when I hold a Fender Stratocaster, I'm like, wow, I'm the biggest person that's ever existed holding this tiny toy guitar. And when I held the Firebird, I just felt I felt normal. I felt like, oh, this fits me. This feels right. It feels like the right weight and the right size and really comfortable to hold. And it doesn't feel too heavy. It was like this weird Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Like, this guitar is just right. And I told my dad, I was like, well, I know it's Thanksgiving, but can you call your friend and tell him that I'll buy it from him right now? And it was like way cheaper than it should have been. And I was like, well, perfect. I'm going home with this guitar. And started writing like as soon as I got home from that dinner on that guitar. I plugged it into this like stupid little PV amp that I had that was like a practice amp. And was just like, well, I'm writing a lot of songs on this, and started that night and pretty much didn't put it down for the next 2 months. And I'd never played an electric guitar before. I'd only ever played my acoustic guitar. Getting this electric guitar really opened up this whole other world of taking up space in my songwriting, where before I maybe felt quieter and smaller and kind of limited in what I could express and what I could process. But getting this like big, heavy, loud electric guitar was a really cool way for me to kind of translate those big, heavy feelings. And it just completely changed the way that I write songs and it changed the way that I perform. And suddenly this kind of small, and I kind of describe myself as somewhat meek, especially before the last podcast episode and my songwriting up until that point, I always thought of myself as kind of small and trying not to take up much space and trying to be in the background of other bands and being a background vocalist or whatever I was in the bands in my community. Once I started writing this new record and I got that electric guitar, things changed and I felt more like a front person with something to yell about. And it was exactly what I needed to be able to process through a lot of those things. So really, I love that we're recording this now And the last time we recorded was really at the beginning of so many big changes in my life, because I'm sure when I listen to both of them together, it's like, oh, this bitch is the same and she's always been the same. But I also like to think like, wow, this is the most drastic change that has ever happened in my life is in between those two time periods. She should know. I think I kind of mentioned it before about this sort of lost year that I talk about where I didn't really cry for a year, but that autopilot feeling was really the only way that I can explain it, in that I wasn't really feeling any of my feelings. I've always been a person that's like, all I care about is listening to or playing music. And during this year, I kind of stopped listening to music, and I was listening to podcasts pretty much 90% of the time, because it was somebody else's thoughts and feelings and expression of the world, and I didn't have to have any of my own. I was running a lot, and I was going to the gym a lot, and I was just listening to other people's perspectives. Suddenly, a year had gone by, and I'd done nothing really with my own brain, and it felt so strange, and I was like, somehow I've been waking up every morning and going to work and eating food and drinking coffee, and I don't really remember much of it. I remember just existing and being there, but I don't remember feeling anything, and I don't remember processing anything, and autopilot is definitely the only way that I can think to explain that time. And when I started to realize how long it had been in that state of mind was really when I had made a friend that was just so, one of those friends that's just such an emotional connection right off the bat. This person was curious about like my emotional state and would ask questions about like, wow, you've been through a lot, or wow, this is really interesting. Like, how do you feel about that? And I like, it felt like when Dorothy finds the Tin Man in The Wizard of Oz and he's like asking her for the oil can. And like somebody asking me these questions was just like these little tiny bits of oil and the gears. And I'd been like frozen for so long. And I was like, oh, I do have feelings. I do have thoughts. There is a me in here. It's not just about taking care of other people or taking care of the situation at hand. It's about how I feel about the world. And being asked these questions and having an emotional connection with a new person really just kind of started to make those gears start to turn and made me kind of panic in this big way, where suddenly I was awake and I was 27 almost, and I was married, and I wasn't stoked about it. And I was in this life, in this office job, in this world that I didn't really feel like I'd chosen for myself. I just kind of was there. And it made me really panic and start to just deeply be so worried about the state of how I got there and what I'd chosen, and thinking I couldn't get out of any of it. And it started making me really aware of everything around me. And I started talking to my partner at the time and just saying like, how did we get here? Do we know each other? Is this the right thing? Like, what if this isn't what either of us wants? And did we just like decide to do all of this just because we thought we were supposed to? And now we're like waking up and we're looking around us going like, how did I get here? This is not my beautiful house.
Where did the rest of my light go? Did I use it all last night?
In the process of that, my partner asked me for a divorce, and it felt really out of the blue, but it also felt like this final like earth-shattering change that woke me up from autopilot. And suddenly I was processing the grief of this family member that I had lost a year before, and processing so many big feelings that had happened as a young person just existing in their 20s, because that's an emotional landmine at every corner. And it really just made me start to process everything, and it took a lot of outside influence to wake me up and get me out of that autopilot state, but I'm really grateful that it did. So in writing No Woman is the Sea, whenever I've explained that process of writing it, I've always explained it as my divorce record. And I think that is a really simplified way of looking at it, because the feelings that I feel are conveyed in it are really messy and all over the place and have a lot to do with both my divorce and grief and loss and just growing up and nostalgic things that hurt you. For me, it's my divorce from that autopilot version of myself and my divorce from this relationship that was no longer good for me and my divorce from this weird, oversimplified, overconfident version of me that thought she had it all figured out. No Woman is the Sea is representative of my creative process at the time in a really cool way, in that it didn't really feel like there was a lot of rhyme or reason to the writing process at that time. It felt really chaotic. It felt really messy. It felt really feelings driven and tequila driven. And working through it, just it never was like, oh, there's a theme to this record. It was really just, here's this weird feeling in this moment, and then tomorrow it's going to feel totally different, but it's part of the same song somehow. And how do I make that work? And I really love the way that when we recorded it, we kind of stuck with the theme of it not really having a theme. Throughout the recording, there's country moments and there's dance moments and there's like a disco bass on part of a song. And there's two over 7 minute long songs about feelings on this thing. And it's just, to me, it doesn't feel like there's any one trajectory, and it is really messy. And I don't know that I'd approach recording an album the same way again, but it feels really appropriate to how the writing process was, because it was this completely new way of writing music for me, and it was this completely messy and outrageous direction in recording it too. So I feel like the end product of it really reflects how messy and weird and human it was to write it, and I don't think I'd have it any other way. The song Weightless on the record was actually one of the first ones that I had written for this album. And it had started before all of the romantic heartbreak pieces, in that it was just solely a song about grief for me. It's fitting that we talked a lot about like crying and not being able to crying, because this was really a song about that feeling of, I want to cry and these people around me are crying, and I feel this like weird weight of somebody like judging the way I'm processing grief and the fact that I'm unable to cry about this thing. Like, does that make me a bad person? Does that make me a total sociopath for not being able to feel these feelings the right way? And you just have no idea how grief is going to hit you and how long it's going to take to process, and if you're going to be a person that sobs at a funeral, or if you're going to be the person that's project managing and putting together the event schedule for a funeral instead of like the person that can't get it together. And when I lost my stepfather, I was very much the person that was project managing this tragedy. I was, you know, I was organizing this event. I was booking a venue. I was figuring out all the logistics of death. And Weightless is this song about like when you get home from a day of scheduling and figuring out the logistics of somebody dying, how you deal with that and how you process that feeling of, I'm exhausted, but I miss you. And I feel this big wave, but it doesn't look like how the other people around me are feeling it. So what's wrong with me in that? And I really love this song because it was one of the first songs I ever wrote that wasn't necessarily about like romance and about romantic heartbreak. It was really just about death and grief, and almost from like the perspective of me having a conversation with like what I perceived to be death, or what I perceived to be kind of like this grim reaper type of like watching me and waiting for me to break or to process differently. And when I handed it to my songwriting partner, Jordan Watko, he spent some time with it and he came back to me and said, what if we made this like a dancey song? Like, I know this is like one of the most heartbreaking tracks on the record, but what if we gave it a dance beat? And what if that's how we processed this? And I really loved that because as somebody that's always had a lot of big feelings, like having little dance parties and dancing through my feelings and putting on a song to dance to like physically work through something has always been one of my go-to like processing activities. So when Jordan was like, I've put this really dope like disco beat on top of this really heartbreaking song you wrote, I heard it and was like, oh my God, this is perfect. This is exactly what I want. So the thought of dancing and crying and being really sad and shaking your ass was just like so appealing to me. But I fear that there'll be nothing left of me. Yeah, I fear that there'll be nothing left of me. Yeah, I fear that there'll be nothing left of me. We are going to listen to the song Crying Wolf from my album No Woman Is the Sea. This song is about a lot of things, but it's about no longer being small and trying to take up more space and what to do when you feel inherently apologetic about that. Because I've always been somebody who's tried to be the smallest or the least inconvenient type of person I can be, always just whatever you want, whatever you need, I can do that for you. I'm going to be over here. I don't have any feelings. I don't have any emotions. I'm really easy. I'm low maintenance. Everything you want me to be, I can be. And when I wrote this song, it was about regretting not being that anymore. I'd fought for a really long time to be able to say, no, I do have feelings, and they're messy, and they're gross, and they hurt people. And I feel so bad about that. Like, I want so badly to be like, I didn't mean any of it, and I'm so sorry. But that wasn't my truth. And I had to process this feeling of like, what do I do when I want to apologize for who I am so badly because it hurt people? But if I did that, I would be betraying myself. Here's me, and I made some dumb decisions, and I hurt some people in those decisions, but I wouldn't do it differently. The refrain in this song is, are you sad enough to say that you're sorry? And that refrain is me singing to me. It's me singing to myself on the floor, drunk, writing this song, being like, look what you've done. I have a horrible habit of being much more mean to myself than anybody else. But that song was saying like, wow, you're so sad. Are you ready to apologize and go back on like everything that you've done to get to this point? And me having to be like, no, I'm just going to have to feel bad about it because I'm not sorry for any of it. We are always going to hurt people. It's human. We can try our best to not do that, but it's going to happen if you're trying to be true to yourself. We're all just such different people. And being able to create this song that conveyed that for me and was almost like this weird little anthem as I was going through all of this of just like, no, it's okay. Keep going. Don't apologize to anybody. It's fine. You're like being true to yourself. That's all that matters. Just keep going. It was like my own little weird anthem for it. And I'm excited about how the song turned out. And the fact that people are like, this song rips because this riff is really cool. And this bass is like really gnarly and awesome. I'm like, yes, I love everything about that.
Not want to made it new, and I dig in to my emptiness. You know, I try to keep it from growing, but my heart.
Find my music online. I'm streaming in everywhere that is streamable. So Spotify or Apple Music, YouTube, you can find me under Jocelie Paulette. I try to keep my Bandcamp the most updated because I love Bandcamp. I think that's the best way to support musicians that you love. I have a lot of demos and old stuff that I never recorded in a studio on Bandcamp, and I only keep it on Bandcamp. I'll probably never put it anywhere else. But then I'm also probably posting on Instagram more often about shows and about collaborations and singles and things like that that will be released. That's probably the best way to keep up to date with my stuff, but you'll also have to deal with me ridiculously sharing music that I'm listening to or feelings or memes or other stuff. I have a really hard time separating my like music self with my personal self, so it's all just kind of wrapped into one on the internet. So at Brosalie on Instagram or Jocelie Paulette on Bandcamp are probably my best places to find me. So I released this record in March of 2020, wasn't able to play any shows on it, really started playing shows on it this fall, and then ran out of the record. So I don't have any physical music anymore to play shows and to promote on. And now that No Woman Is the Sea feels a little older to me, I'm really in this place where I want to have a lot more new music to come out. And I've been writing over the last year and a half of pandemic hell and quarantine and feelings and the world being so scary and hard all the time. I've been writing a lot, so I'm sitting on a lot of new material that my writing partner, my bandmate Jordan, and I have been kind of sifting through and figuring out what we want to do with it. I am imagining next year will be more singles, possibly an EP release. I have no plans to do a full album anytime soon, but possibly within the next few years. Right now, it's kind of just taking it day by day. Jordan and I are both sensitive, tender babies that get burned out really easily. And this show season, while it was amazing and we got to play a lot of incredible shows, it was really exhausting. So both of us are just kind of like, let's just write and record and have fun with music for a little while and not let it be a stressful thing for a few months. No shows until January. I am playing at the end of January at ABG's in Provo, January 22nd. I will be playing with Bly, Wallentine, and Little Moon, who are some of my favorite musicians locally. So that's the next thing I have booked so far. I am taking December off just to try and write and record a little bit more. If you enjoyed this episode of Sound Waves, please take 60 seconds to rate and review us on iTunes.
The feelings that come with a broken heart, but here they are again.
Slug's Comedy Localized Showcase is back. Catch local comedians Dallas Briggs, Tanner Nicholson, Jordan Harris, and Sam Poulter on stage at Urban Lounge on Thursday, December 16th. Doors open at 7, sets start at 8. Tickets for this 21-plus show are $5 and can be purchased at theurbanloungeslc.com. All shows at Urban Lounge require proof of vaccination or a negative COVID-19 test within 72 hours of the show for entry. Masks are required indoors, except when actively drinking.